Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone, ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. This is Tony's Political Ramblings. All right, and tonight I wanted to get into a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, that being energy. I, for one, love energy, energy policy, the history of energy production and generation, not only in the US but around the world. It's something that I am very interested in, and it's something that I love talking about, hence why I'm making a very long-winded podcast about me talking about energy. But within this larger field of energy, because obviously this is a very large topic, within this field, I wanted to focus today on exclusively on the oil and gas industry and really unmasking, lifting up the veil, if you will, on this industry that is so important to our everyday lives right now, and really figuring out really what's going on in this industry and what it means for all of us moving forward. Now, I want to begin with looking at sort of like a broad view of where the oil and gas industry is today. Now, obviously, I don't really have to tell you all very much about this. You're all probably very well aware of the influence that oil and gas have on our day-to-day lives. Driving in cars, flying on planes, heating one's home or place of residence. You know, there are so many things around the world that run on oil and gas. No doubt about it. It's something that it is one of the most important international commodities on the planet. No doubt about that. However, there are some pieces here going on that I don't think everyone is necessarily aware of, and that I thought I would share with you all today. So, to begin, you have the largest producers of oil and gas around the planet. The largest producers of oil here around the world would be the US, Russia, and Saudi Arabia. Now, those are three nations that have benefited greatly from this massive stockpile of oil that they have on their land and, or in the bodies of water nearby, specifically in the case of the US. A lot of oil drilling is done offshore here in the U.S. One of the most famous or infamous examples of this was the BP oil spill back 10 years ago in the Gulf of Mexico that just dumped just millions and millions and millions of barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico that has had a very significant impact on the environments in those areas to this day. That's one piece of it. There's obviously the sort of risk associated with it. You know, when you're going into the ground to get oil and natural gas for that matter, you're going into, again, either underground or underwater. You're digging deep into the surface of the earth, and you're extracting this material, and then you're shipping it through pipelines to these refineries. This is essentially how it works for both. It's a little different for each one, but just to keep it simple, you know, you pass it through these pipelines from one place to a refinery. At that point, the oil or natural gas is refined into whatever it will be used at its next stage. Oil most oftentimes is refined into gasoline, and as far as the U.S. is concerned, it is turned into gasoline, and then it is shipped out to individual gas stations. Natural gas, on the other hand, has a little bit more of a complicated route. It could be liquefied. They call that LNG, liquefied natural gas, and then it could be shipped overseas. You're seeing that a lot now, particularly since the start of the war in Ukraine. Because a lot of Europe was dependent on Russia for oil and gas. Now you're having the U.S. having to fill that void that when the gas has essentially been turned off in a lot of places because of technical failings on the Russian side. But anyway, natural gas can take a bunch of different forms. It essentially moves around you know, it follows that same sort of process. It's pulled out of the earth, shipped to a refinery, and then shipped to its end destination. There are a lot of pieces in that process, and a lot of things that can go wrong. So number one, it's a very risky business. There have been a number of high-profile problems coming from fracking, which is hydraulic fracturing, which that is a means of getting natural gas out of the ground that involves very high-pressure fluids being shot and breaking up rocks underneath the earth. And that frees up the natural gas that is within these rocks. And then the gas is extracted, sent to the pipelines, you know, the rest. There have been a lot of explosions that have been not very far from where I've lived at a few points in my life. Obviously, you have oil spills, all these sorts of things. There is an inherent danger in that. And not only that, but you have the environmental hazards that come from these refineries. Again, it doesn't really take much digging to find that there are significant adverse health impacts from living near an extraction site or a refinery. There's no doubt about that. So there are a lot of inherent risks, and a lot of people die every year from these sites. So that's one thing to know, that it's just an inherently risky and dangerous industry that is responsible for a significant number of deaths on an annual basis. So that's number one. But number two, isn't it the cheapest form of energy that we have? Yes and no. At the present moment, and in recent years, it probably has been when you pay for it at the end of the day. However, the oil and gas industries get a significant amount of government subsidies in order to make sure that these firms and state-owned enterprises, which I'll get into later, remain profitable in the long term. There are just a lot of subsidies that go to these places and go to these industries to keep the prices down. In 2020 alone, $5.9 trillion were sent to the oil and gas industry and just fossil fuels in general around the world to keep their prices down. And when you look at other forms of energy that are being generated in the present day, you know, more renewable forms like solar and wind, they just don't have this kind of government support that is really in a lot of places entrenched and is really hard to shift around. So it would essentially be as if, say, two people are running a race together, or against each other, I should say. But one person gets nudged about 100 feet closer to the finish line than the other person. And so that first person would be these petrol companies, oil and gas giants around the world, who are getting all of these subsidies from their governments to stay profitable and to make money and to keep their prices down. Meanwhile, historically, in a lot of places, this is changing, but in a lot of places, this has been the case. Solar, wind, nuclear, maybe not nuclear, but solar and wind certainly, hydropower, have not received these sorts of government backing, this sort of government backing in the same way. So these oil and gas companies might not be as profitable as you think if they didn't have all these subsidies backing them up. And they might not be as cheap, this energy generation might not be as cheap as you were led to believe. So that's really a big piece of this. It's, you know, a lot of industries around the world have significant subsidies, but oil and gas, because it is such an expensive industry, energy production in general is just a very expensive industry, but because oil and gas gets so much money, it's really an unfair game. So that's number one. So number three, but isn't it at least spreading American values and American influence around the world? You know, this is, you know, there are, you know, Tony, you did just say at the beginning of this episode that the U.S. is the great largest producer of oil and a very large producer of natural gas. This is true, but they're not the only ones. And the thing with oil and gas is that they're not very easily exported to other parts of the world. You know, it just, think about it in this way. I mean, they are relatively compared to other forms of energy, certainly. But if you think about it in this scenario, let's use the European example. Is a European country, we'll say France, are they more likely to buy oil, gas, what have you, from a place like Russia, who is, you know, a few countries away? And there are, we'll just say Germany, because Germany has bought all kinds of Russian oil and gas for the last 20, 30 years. We'll just say Germany. Are they going to buy from a country that is a couple quick pipelines away, or are they going to buy it from the United States that is an entire ocean away? A lot of this comes down to proximity. And so while American companies and American corporations may have a role in a lot of these transactions here, they don't necessarily carry over overseas. And they don't necessarily go too terribly far outside of their immediate sort of region. Sort of oil, American oil at the very least, doesn't travel too terribly far in most cases. A lot of the times, the pipelines that feed Europe will likely come straight from Russia, just because it's a simple proximity thing. Why would you pay more for the same sort of product to go twice the distance? It's just basic economics. And so it's really a situation where, you know, yes, there are large American corporations involved, but it's not necessarily an American-dominated industry. But at least, and this is for my people on the right side, the conservative side of the aisle, at least it spreads free market capitalism, right? No, it does not. A lot of the largest oil producers, refiners, and the oil companies in general are not private corporations. They are what we call state-owned enterprises. I mentioned earlier SOEs. That's what that stands for. State-owned enterprises, meaning that the government of a given country has either part or whole control of the entire company or corporation. And of the 10 largest oil companies around the world, four of them are state-owned enterprises. The number one being Saudi Aramco. And certainly by their market cap, they are well ahead of the number two being ExxonMobil. Saudi Aramco's market cap right now, at the time of recording here, is $2.171 trillion. Next in line, Exxon, as I said, is at $398 billion. Like I said, this is a very high dollar business here. But when you go through the rest of the top 10, you have Saudi Aramco, like I said. You have Equinor. You have PetroChina. You have Gazprom, that are all state-owned enterprises, meaning that the government owns these companies. And the government owns their revenue, or at least part of it. So again, this is more for my folks on the right side of the aisle, as it were, more conservative types who are more concerned with the spread of free market capitalism and private business and private enterprise. If you are really gung-ho with the oil and gas industry, that's not what you're supporting. You're supporting a government-owned industry, quite frankly. And I personally don't have any kind of issue with that, you know, in principle, but I know a lot of people do. So here's a good counterexample. If you're ever in a conversation with somebody and they say, oh, well, I want free market capitalism, then, you know, tell them to get an electric vehicle then, because their oil and gas likely comes from Saudi Aramco at some point. And the reason why I say that is because the largest oil refinery here in the United States is owned and operated by Saudi Aramco. That's Port Arthur Refinery in Texas. So if, again, anyone from that area, it's Gulf of Mexico, Southeast Texas, you know, just know that the Saudis own the largest oil refinery in North America. And it happens to be in Texas. So, that, again, that's interesting to know. And then on a side too, this isn't necessarily something that's exclusive to the oil and gas industry, but I think it's worth mentioning here as well. A lot of people are upset about the war in Ukraine right now and how Russia invaded without, you know, without Ukraine provoking them in any significant way. And I'm completely with all of you on that point. This war that's going on still at the time of recording is a travesty, and it's a politically motivated stunt that has resulted in significant loss of life, and it's horrible. There's no doubt about that. However, I think it is worth mentioning that the Russian economy is built on its oil and gas industry. An article I'm going to have linked in the references section here says that about 80% of the Russian economy relies on oil and gas. So my point here is that through Russia's oil and gas industry and a continued reliance on oil and gas by Western European nations, I'm looking at you, Germany, for one, allowed for Russia to get to a position where it is now, where it can invade Ukraine, and for the second time, and invade other countries like Georgia without any sort of staunch international response until now. And it's really costing a lot of countries in Europe because they tied their ship to Russia and promoted their government, their industries, because they just needed oil and gas. And now, once the pipes are getting turned off, and now we're getting into the situation where everybody has to be forced to move away from Russian oil, now it's a little too late. And whereas if these countries had really invested in renewable energy 20 years ago, we would not be in this situation today. So I think in the future, and really in the present day, it is incredibly significant and incredibly important for nations to start shifting towards renewable forms of energy to account for the environmental damage that's being done by fossil fuels, particularly oil and gas, to level out that playing field economically, to get renewable energy sources on the same footing as oil and gas so they can surpass them, because oftentimes, especially now, renewable forms of energy are cheaper to use. And for one, it's another way for America to support its own business and manufacturing by generating a lot of their energy here in the U.S. and creating proprietary technology to harness renewable energy that can be sold abroad. And finally, to stop promoting and backing nations like Russia and Saudi Arabia that run, and the People's Republic of China, that run these state-owned enterprises that are supported by countries that buy their oil. All of this is to say, the next time you're at the pump, there you realize there's a lot more going on here than the numbers you see on the screen in front of you.